I'm speaking with Chris Hunt. He's a up-and-coming cartoonist, and he's got an exciting new comic book called Carver, A Paris Story. And we'll just get right to it. Chris, I saw this short film that you did, and I almost missed it. I was looking over different things, and so I'll go ahead and check out the short film. And I saw it to the very end, so the cat's out of the bag. I know you're the guy playing Carver, and you do look like Ernest Hemingway a little bit. I know that's kind of something you're maybe a little self-conscious about talking about, but I find that really fascinating. That you just jump right into New York, and you're just doing everything, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was it's been a long journey to get to New York and get this far with my career in Carver. And I actually have to say, like, doing the short film was probably one of the most productive things. It just was, it's a bit unorthodox, I think, for most comic book creators, but I think it came in really handy personally.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of cartoonists would like to be on a stage. I can't think I know there's a number of cartoonists who had to make a decision whether they wanted to pursue it on the stage or on a page. And maybe you'll be able to do a little of both over the years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about being in New York, and it's something that I've considered, because, I mean, when I was in Idaho growing up, I used to do theater a lot. I almost flunked out of high school, actually, because I was in just touring. And I've done, like, a lot of on-camera stuff, like local production stuff mostly, and then voiceover work. And I always loved it, but, you know, like, to your point, there's usually, like, a juncture that occurs where you can be okay at a lot of things, but if you want to be really, if you want to dedicate yourself to something, you got to, you know, make a decision at some point. And comics were the thing that, you know, no matter how much I tried to maybe do a more conventional thing or do a different thing, I always came back to comics. But, you know, being in New York, there's ample opportunity to take classes or try to participate, but, you know, so far it's just been about getting my sea legs here for the past couple of years.
Yeah, well, that segues right into your getting to work with Paul Pope. What was that like for you?
Well, I mean, you know, Paul and I have known each other for quite some time now, and, you know, it's pretty crazy just for the fact that, you know, I read Paul's THB that he was self-publishing in Ohio before I moved out to Idaho.
Oh.
And, like, I can remember, you know, what the room was like, where I was when I read THB. I pretty much decided at that point, like, okay, I'm going to make comics. I want to do what this guy does. And so it took years to, you know, eventually start a conversation with him. But, you know, it's pretty incredible. I mean, they say sometimes you shouldn't meet your heroes, you know, because you have that tendency to put people on a pedestal. But, you know, Paul's just one of the nicest, most thoughtful individuals I've ever met. And there are times when, you know, we're friends now, but there are those times, you know, when I'm having a conversation with him or we're talking about story ideas, and like, I have to say to myself, holy shit, I'm writing a story with Paul Pope or something, you know. It's like, it's a little surreal, but
yeah.
He's just been a wealth of knowledge and a really great friend.
Well, I've gotten to meet him briefly and observe him as he's making his way through Comic-Con or with an after party. And he seems like a very mellow guy, but also a very driven person. I got to sit in one of his workshops, and he seems like he's a very serious dude and very old school. He loves some Milton Caniff, and so I guess he taught you how to use the brush and do upstrokes instead of backstrokes and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that, I think as a fan of comics, and you're a cartoonist, and I think that anybody who's a fan of comics at some point considers, you know, wanting to make a comic at some point. And I think because I fell in love with Paul's books, I always knew that somehow, some way, I wanted to use a brush. And, you know, which is a, I don't, I, is that what you use? So I'm like, curiosity, or what kind of tools do you use? Okay, yeah. So, you know, that's a long path. You don't just, like, pick a brush up and suddenly you're good to go. And, you know, it's funny because it's not like, you know, he sat with me and he was, like, holding my hand or something and, like, saying go up, go down. But it was the sort of that alchemic kind of, you know, advice where, you know, the brush kind of, unfortunately, will sort of display your insecurities or your confidence. You've got to... You might know how to use a brush, but you might not be able to effectively use it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that Paul really helped me with, especially when we were at that residency, to get me to a point where I felt confident that, you know, it might not be perfect, and it might not be exactly how I see it in my head, but, you know, you learn how to kind of surf that wave when you're using a brush. Now, that's one of the things that I owe him big time for.
Yeah, I want to make sure we stay on track, because we can meander and talk for a long time on the subject of process. Let's talk a little bit about Carver. It's a crime noir story. Carver's the main character. He's in Paris. I guess it's like the 1930s, around that time. And
1920s. It's if you've read Courts of Maltese, it's the same time frame. Early to mid 20s is where most of the stories I have in my head set up.
So your Carver is an homage to Corto Maltese by Hugo
Pratt.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in your story, he's trying to save the love of his life, Catherine, because she's been kidnapped by this weirdo stacker.
Well, it's actually her daughter. Kidnapped.
I had no way of knowing. I guess we don't know that yet, do we?
Well, no. I mean, it's there. I mean, it's definitely that part's not hidden. The nature of everybody in that first issue, as seemingly disjointed or unconnected as they are, everybody's in somebody's bubble. I guess you would say they've all been connected in some way, shape, or form at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's pulling from a lot of things. It's very noir. It's very crime. You know, Carver himself is an adventurer, like a gentleman of fortune, but it's kind of like a Reservoir Dogs thing where, you know, it's a movie about a diamond heist, and you never see the diamond heist. You just see what leads up to it
mm-hmm.
and what happens after it. You're not going to see Carver fighting a lion or anything, or, you know, going, you know, into a temple to steal a relic, but that's all the stuff that informed him to the point when you meet him in Paris in the story.
And I need to ask you now, before we run out of time, your story is loosely based on your own real-life romantic adventure. Talk about that.
There was I went and saw about a girl a few years ago in France, and
uh-huh.
I ended up in Paris before I left. And, you know, you should never go to Paris with somebody you're kind of in love with or is kind of in love with you. It gets a little murky. And so, I mean, like, obviously, there wasn't a guy in a silk mask, and we didn't have to fight any anarchists while we were there. But yeah, it's my Paris story that I, you know, kind of projected onto Carver, because the character Carver has been somebody I've had in my back pocket for a while, but I always wanted to kind of, like, flesh it out. But, you know, there's that trip I took to Paris, and there's a lot more things that, as the story will progress through the five issues, that it's not just this one interaction I had with this girl. There's a lot of, you know, things that have happened in my life since that my Paris story happened, you know, dealing with loss and, you know, kind of how you pick yourself up after something like that occurs. It's an adventure noir crime story, and it works, I think, on a surface level for that. But there's, if you want to read into the subtext, there's a lot more for me that's going on. I don't know if I actually achieved that. That remains to be seen.
Well, we can talk for a little bit more. I know you got a little bit of a time crunch, but the way I see it, I think you'll appreciate this. I just wanted to throw this in that our cartooning is a lot like painting. As a painter wants to paint, sometimes you just have to find a really good excuse to paint. So
mm-hmm.
I see it as Carver is like, this is just an opportunity to just jam and do all sorts of fun stuff. There is a story, of course. That's also the love of storytelling. But I mean, you must have it now in your bones that you just want, like, give me a reason, I'm going to go in there and start using a brush.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think that Carver, the world that has sprung up around Carver for me, is just a sandbox that I can always go back to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hope that the book is successful enough that, you know, we can keep making books. But, you know, it's one of those things where I'll keep writing Carver in my head probably as long as I go on. And I think that's part of the reason why I like Hugo Pratt's Courts of Maltese so much, is that, you know, once that character was there, you don't have to end the story. I mean, you know, you can kind of go sideways, up and down, and just keep telling stories about Corto because of the nature of the character and the nature of, like, the point in history. But, you know, it's just like, it's great to have something where you can just jump in and just kind of have fun or be serious, and it can be whatever you want it to be. I mean, this first story is a little bit more serious in tone, but, you know, that's not to say that there couldn't just be a fun Raiders of the Lost Ark Carver story that I do at some point, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's humorous elements. I mean, you jump right out the gate with a strong first issue.
Thank you.
It's available now, I assume, or is that, no, it's coming out mid-September, right?
It's actually going to be November 11th. We're doing it's up in previews right now.
Oh, I see.
We're doing pre-orders and everything. So the first issue will be out November 11th.
Okay.
So I'm jamming on number two right now. The first part of issue one when I was doing a Patreon was online for a bit. Right now we kind of all agreed that, you know, we have some preview pages going out, and they'll be going up here in the next couple weeks as we're kind of doing the pre-orders with Diamond. But I'm anxious to see how it goes, because really, at the end of the day, it's a European comic about an American in an American comic book market. So I don't really know. You know, I'm hoping it resonates with people, but at the same time, though, you know, it's a cape and cowl market for a lot of us. So, you know, I hope it finds an audience.
I think your enthusiasm will resonate with folks, and if people like, you can spin it in a variety of ways, like Quentin Tarantino type movies,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of that.
Yeah, I mean, Tarantino, I think it's easy to want to just, you know, do the Tarantino method to everything and find a new way or a contemporary way to put a spin on it, like an old trope. I still love that, though. Like, I can't wait for The Hateful Eight to come out. Like, Tarantino in a cowboy movie? Like,
yeah.
Hell yeah. Like, I'm totally there. Same with Inglourious Basterds and that kind of thing. I think that, I don't know how you feel about this as a creator, but there's something nice when you can jump into a sandbox that's familiar, you know other people are familiar with.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do the exposition necessarily. You can look at Carver and pretty much know what he's about, just in the way you can look at Aldo Raines and Inglourious Basterds and pretty much know what he's about. And
sure.
Then you get to go have fun. You get to go and do your deviations then.
And this is the second in a line of comics coming out from Z2, creator-owned work.
Yeah.
And that's very cool. And so you got issue one, November 1st, you said?
November 11th, which
Sorry.
Is funny because...
I've got dyslexia.
Because Carver is actually, one of the things about his background character is that he was a World War I Marine. And so November 11th actually is, you know, 11-11. That was the day that the World War I stopped. It was like, you know, 11 o'clock at 11, you know, 11-11 on 11-11.
Oh,
when World War I started. I mean, a complete fluke and coincidence that occurred, but
yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Well, perfect. That'd be easy to remember. And then issue two, right in December, I guess, or scheduled for December.
Yep. And, you know, we're trucking along right now, so I don't foresee any issue with getting the damn thing done, you know.
Well, very good. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I hope to do it again
likewise.
Sometime.
Yeah, I would love to again. Yeah, I, you know, so as you know, it's always fun to talk about cartooning and, you know, process and all that stuff. We could probably talk for hours if we give ourselves a chance to.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully this brief interview will help spread the word.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, likewise. Again, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it immensely.
Oh, of course.